Good evening and welcome to Late Night Live with Pastor Al. Got a Bible question? Wondering what to make of current events? Call now at 888-677-9673. That's 888-677-9673. Now open your Bibles, open your minds, and join in the conversation with your Late Night Live host, Pastor Al Davis.
American 11, are you trying to call?
The cockpit is not answering their phone.
Our number one has been staffed, and our five has been staffed.
Hey, I'm going to call from Washington. I have a situation with American 11, a possible hijack.
What's going on, Betty? The aircraft is erratic again. Problem, very erratic. Betty, talk to me. Betty, are you there? Betty?
United 175, New York. We have some problems over here right now. We might have a hijack over here, two of them.
United 93, that traffic for you is 1 o'clock, 12 miles eastbound, 370.
Negative contact, we're looking at United 93.
United 93, Cleveland, if you hear the center right then.
They got that piece of dog.
Tuesday, 9:47 a.m.
Hi, baby. Baby, you have to listen to me carefully. I'm on a plane that's been hijacked. I'm on the plane. I'm calling from the plane. I want to tell you I love you. Please tell my children that I love them very much. And I'm so sorry, babe. I hope to be able to see your face again, baby. I love you.
Bye. We're 56865. We have, I believe it is a Boeing 757. Can you see him up there, sir?
That's concurred. It looks like he's rocking his wings.
Roger.
He's rocking back and forth.
We're 56865. I advise you stay away from that aircraft. Go north as fast as you can.
United 93. Have you got information on that yet?
Yeah, he's down.
He's down?
Yes.
When did he land?
He did not land.
Oh, he's down?
Yes,
down?
Somewhere up northeast of Camp David.
Me, I just want to let you know I love you, and I'm stuck in this building in New York. There's lots of smoke, and you just want to do the know, but I love you. But what is...
I'm on the 83rd floor.
I'm gonna die, aren't I?
No. Ma'am, say your prayers.
God.
We're gonna think positive because you gotta help each other get off the floor.
You're listening to Late Night Live with Pastor Al. I'm your host, Pastor Al Davis, and we're coming to you. Tomorrow is the anniversary of the September 11 attacks in 2001. And, of course, many of our listeners remember some of those things as they took place. For a large number of people, these are memories now. I can remember growing up hearing about the Kennedy assassination and everybody saying, I know where I was and what I was doing when that took place. I was too young to know what had happened when President Kennedy was assassinated, but I distinctly remember where I was and what I was doing when the 9/11 attacks took place. One of those moments that you hope never occurs in your lifetime. And tonight on Late Night Live with Pastor Al, we started a little bit differently because I wanted to set the mood and put you in remembrance of what happened back on that beautiful, absolutely gorgeous September morning in 2001. It was an absolutely gorgeous day. My wife had gone off to work. She was working in a in a nursing home facility, nursing care, long-term care facility at the time. And she had gone off to work, and I was trying to get things together. And I had taken my daughter to school, and I was standing in the living room when my wife called, and she said, "Do you have the TV on?" I said, "No." She said, "Turn it on right now." I said, "What channel?" And she said, "It doesn't matter." You know, when you hear that kind of a statement, "It doesn't matter," you know something serious is going on. And she had gone into a residence room just as the second plane had flown into the second tower and saw that. And I turned it on. And to say that I was riveted, you know, just standing there watching the events take place. And then, of course, Flight 93, if you've seen the path of Flight 93, it turned around over northeastern Ohio, literally over where I'm sitting right now on that morning. And it had been bound for Chicago. There's reason to believe that they were targeting the Chicago, the Sears Tower in Chicago. And that was considered to be the target of that flight. But the flight that went into the Pentagon, a number of people, and I've heard this from some people who were some friends of mine who were still in the Air Force at the time, and also talking with a friend of mine who was an air traffic controller at Cleveland Center at the time. They believe that the flight that hit the Pentagon actually was initially targeting the White House or the Capitol building. And again, this is not proven, but I've had some people suggest to me that there was something that took place on that flight and somebody attempted to gain control of it to ditch it into Potomac so that it would not go into the Capitol building or the White House. But because of the early morning with the air rising up off from the Potomac, it generated sufficient lift that it carried across the Potomac over the parking lot and into the side of the Pentagon. Tragedy, whether that was the intended target or not. But one thing that happened is when that occurred, Flight 93, it shows that there was communication. Somebody was coordinating things. We may never know all of the details. But Flight 93 made the turn and was coming back, and it appeared to be angling for, again, either the White House or the Capitol building, suggesting that this was a primary target. And the Sears Tower would have been a secondary target. And then, of course, that one went down there in the fields there in Shanksville. And, of course, the 93 Memorial, Flight 93 Memorial, if you ever have the chance to go see that there in Shanksville, just off from, not too far off from the highway, it's easy to get to. Absolutely beautiful setting. And then when you stand there and you see the path that's marked out, they have a wall that marks out the path. Actually, it starts with a line and alongside the parking lot, and you follow that line down, and they have a viewing ramp where you can oversee the field. And then there's the wall that follows the line, and then you can see a boulder that's down at the point where the airplane impacted. And they have a tremendous set of displays there where you can hear what was going on and what eyewitnesses in the Shanksville area were sharing. And all of these things, a million things that people know about. A friend of mine, he's with the Lord now, but he was on an airplane that morning bound for, I think he was bound for somewhere out west, exactly where he was bound for. But one thing that President Trump did is he ordered the FAA to shut down all air traffic that day. And that saved lives. And he said that when their airplane landed, they had a group of Arab men on the airplane who were acting rather nervous, and when the airplane landed, they quickly got off and they left. I share that because there was a book that was out. I wish I could remember the name of it. Another airline pilot, I believe her name was Kathleen Davis, something to that effect. She had written a book, and she shared in the book that there was a flight that landed at Kansas City that had a group of Arab men on it that were slated to hijack that airplane. plane and crash it into one of the buildings. I think she said in Denver. And I believe that was the plane that my friend was on. And had they not grounded the aircraft, of course, he would have been part of the memories of 9/11. And other thoughts, I remember hearing these two jets that were scrambled. I believe they came from the Youngstown Air National Guard Base here in northeastern Ohio. A little Cessna airplane was putzing through the sky. He was up there flying along. Beautiful day, had no radio on, had nothing. He was just enjoying the scenery, flying along, pristine, late summer, early fall morning. And all of a sudden, he has two fighter jets appearing around him. He's going so slow, they had to circle him so that they wouldn't stall out. And he had no clue what was going on. He had no clue that everybody was grounded. And they forced him down at Freedom Field, which is not too far from where I live. And in fact, first airplane ride I ever went on was at Freedom Field, and they set him down there, and immediately he was taken into custody, but the poor guy knew nothing. He had no idea what had just happened, and they didn't know that. And then, of course, a guy working at the air traffic controller, he said that they had a guy that, one pilot that was ordered to go down, I think, in Pittsburgh, and he said, well, no, I can go on to my next site. It's not that much further. And they said, no, you will land in Pittsburgh. He says, no, he was kind of obstinate, and, when he finally landed, the FBI took him off the airplane and wanted to know and investigate. But it was a day of tragedy, a day people didn't know what was going on, what was going to happen next. But it was also a day of heroes. And there were people who just rose to heights that you would not have expected on that day, trying to rescue people, trying to help people. And everybody has their stories, and I share mine every year, talk about what it means and try to help people to remember. The Bible says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And my friends, that battle shows itself in the physical realm from time to time. And we saw that on 9/11. I'm joined in the studio tonight, my good friend Khalid Namar, and he hosts Rising Tide on our sister station, 1420. And he just finished his program a few minutes ago, and I had texted him earlier asking if he would want to join me tonight to share some thoughts. And he's been in a position to see a few things, hear a few things. And I thought rather than just me talking tonight, I'd get him in here. And so he's going to join us here. And also our producer, Seth, got some interesting insights. He was working in radio on that day, and so he's going to share some thoughts too. But Khalid, first of all, introduce yourself, and we'll get to the topic here.
Hello, everybody out there. I'm Khalid Namar. I host Rising Tides, as Pastor Al said, Sunday nights at 9 o'clock to 11 on WHK sister station. Do a lot of local and state issues. We do some national stuff too, but we definitely cover a lot of things that are closer to home, which is where we live. So definitely talk about things that are going on in Cuyahoga County and in the region and down in Columbus, as well as some social topics, social economic topics as well. And I'm in my seventh week.
Wow, and it's a good program. I usually listen to it on my way up here.
Yeah, thank you. You've been a guest star. I think it was my first or second episode.
So shortly after that, you were on with us. Yes. About a month ago. And so I'm glad on short notice you're willing to come on.
Absolutely. It was a short trip next door.
Well, yeah, you just walked through a hallway and on an office, yeah. I guess. So yeah. That worked out pretty good. So yeah. I'm glad you're able to do that. But, you know, you've been active here in northeastern Ohio and with a lot of conservative groups and different things like that and some of your background in security and things. Where were you on September 11? Where were you at when this happened?
I had just come home and the TV was on and the first plane had already hit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching like what in the world's going on. Then the second plane hit and I was watching the Today Show.
Yes.
And then I had this sick feeling in my stomach because I was a security officer at a hotel back in 2001 and just got home. And it was this sick feeling, of, which I still get, by the way, every time I see anything 9/11 related on television, like some of those retrospective programs like 9/11 as we watched.
Right.
The feeling of sickness comes back when I see that. So I can't watch it, particularly when I hear the 911 calls from the airplane, mm-hmm. or the voices of people who felt they were going to
just die. Like in that clip that we played, that gets me every time. I was editing that down, and I'm trying to edit it down and just make it a little more concise, and just listening to those things just brings those, like you said, that sick feeling just comes right back.
And the thing about it is, here it is, 2023. It wasn't really 22 years ago. It's just
hard to believe.
It's stunning how quickly the time has gone, and the fact that we don't even hear much about terrorism anymore.
No,
it is totally not even in the headlines. I don't read about any terrorist attacks too much. I read about something in Africa every now and then. We don't hear about any Middle East terrorism. We hear basically nothing about it, and it dominated the headlines for about 20 years after that.
Yes.
And then now we hear nothing.
Yeah, it really has dropped from the headlines. And see, I came into this because when I was in the Air Force, I was stationed over in England. And a course of what I did and what I was exposed to, I was really following a lot of reports, the various intel reports dealing with terrorism in the Mediterranean region and in Europe. People remember the Achille Lauralle, the ship where Leon Klinghoffer, I believe it was pushed over in his wheelchair. Mm-hmm. I was on duty when that was some of that was playing out. I'd say I was on duty when President Reagan sent the airplane or the F-111s down to pay a visit to Hussein Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. But I wasn't. I was in the dentist chair getting my wisdom teeth taken out, listening to these reports coming on the radio of what had happened. But the night before, and all that was stemming because of the terror attacks and everything. And the night before, I was at RAF Chicksands, and RAF stands for Royal Air Force, and the American Air Force bases in England, we carried that designation because we leased them from, they were Royal Air Force bases. But I had was going to a Bible institute that was run by some missionaries that were working with military churches, base churches off around the military bases in England. And the night before that all happened, we had the guys from the bases where they based out of the tankers and the F-111s, F-111s, they were based out of there. These guys were all gone. And they weren't there at the Bible study that night. And somebody said, well, where's so-and-so? Where's brother so-and-so? And said, oh, there's an exercise going on. Well, myself and another guy, where we work, we looked at each other. And in particular, one of my jobs was picking up the overnight message traffic every morning. And we looked at each other. And later when we left, we were in the car because it was just us and said, you know, if there's an exercise going on, we'd know about it. Because we did. That's just because of where we were. And so we're thinking something's going on, something big's going on. And we knew that something was supposed to be going on. Later on, the week later, some of the people who actually loaded the bombs that were dropped on Gaddafi's tent actually told us. They got to view the video, because they had video footage that they had after the attack and everything. They viewed him. They were telling us about it. And we had one bomb that actually went through. Gaddafi slept in a tent because of his tribe and his Arab tribe that he was in and all that. And it wasn't a tent like a little camper tent. It was
pretty very large,
palatial, nice thing. But had he been in a brick and mortar or wooden wall building, he would have died, because the bomb actually went through, ripped through the canvas and detonated against the building after it went through right where he was at. He knew it went through because he changed his behavior considerably right after that. And so I say all that because I was watching all of this terrorist stuff taking place in Europe and in the Mediterranean. And I spent several years doing that when I was stationed over there. Pretty much every day I'm reading terror reports, this happening, that happening. And it wasn't just the Islamic terrorists. It was, you know, it was
the Red Brigades.
Yeah, and the Irish Republican Army.
The Baader
and
the Meinhof Bosque, gang.
Yeah, the Bosque separatists and different ones. And we kind of joke they all went to the same summer camps, you know, but they learned a lot of the same tactics. But you know, and in fact, a friend of mine and I were going to take a trip to Israel while we were there, and we were going to go to Egypt, see the pyramids, and then go from there to Israel, but we couldn't go from Israel to Egypt at the time, because if you had an Israeli passport, you couldn't go into Egypt. So we were going to go to Egypt, and you could go from Egypt to Israel, and that was our plan, and there were several things that were going off that we canceled our trip, because we just knew what was going on, stuff that never made the news. So when 9/11 initially took place, and I was just standing there rooted, just standing in the living room, staring at the television, you know, much like what you were saying, and I realized what was happening once, you know, you knew it was the second tower, and you could see what was happening. And I'm thinking back of all the stuff that was going on in Europe, all the stuff that was going on in the Mediterranean, and quite frankly, there are things that were going on here that just never made the news. And my initial reaction, other than the shock, was, you know, it's finally come home to people. This can't be covered up. People will now know what we've been in the military seeing for a long time. And my honest hope was it would change people. For a short time, churches were packed. You had all the people in Congress, Republican, Democrat, left, right, conservative, liberal, all standing arm in arm, singing God Bless America. It looked great. But a few years, you know, after a few years, back to normal, wasn't it?
Yes. And I remember I was in high school when Gaddafi's tent was bombed. And he did change his behavior. He got pretty quiet for many, many years after that. Many, many years. And he started snitching on his neighbors.
yes, he did.
You know, as they say in England, Reagan put manners on him.
Yes.
And I remember the discotheque bombing.
Yes, I do too.
I think that was in Germany.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And it was a time where we really didn't see all the dots lining up that would lead to 9/11. Because I think there was several things that happened in the late 90s. I think there was the bombings in Dar es Salaam and Nairobi.
Mm-hmm.
There was the USS Cole.
Yes.
All these things were. And then it was, of course, the bombing of the World Trade Center in 93.
Mm-hmm.
These were all dots that eventually led up to 9/11 that were connected. We weren't really paying attention to what was going on.
Right.
And people then now want to, the 9/11 truthers really bother me. They really do.
They bother me too.
And these are people who, no matter what happens, they have to come up with their own alternative theory. Yes. I don't care if it's Princess Diana. She couldn't just die in a car accident. There has to be something else.
Yes.
You know, I don't care if it's just, you know, Michael Jackson, you know, taking pills like most celebrities who die take pills. Mm-hmm. It has to be something else.
Yes.
These people really upset me. And I can say that, thankfully, even though we're still dealing with after effects of 9/11 in many, many ways, thankfully that we have not been dragged into another conflict. Donald Trump was the first president in 20 years that didn't send troops in the Middle East.
Right.
And I think that some people are kind of upset with that, you know? So, when it comes to what had happened, because I grew up Muslim, so I haven't practiced Islam in decades, but I understand why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
But and for people who don't understand, theocracy created 9/11.
Right.
It's theocracy. It's not Islam per se. It's theocracy. The theocracy where Saudi Arabia rules, Iran rules, those are the people that produce terrorism, theocratic states. You notice they don't have too many terrorists coming from Dubai or, you know, even Kuwait.
Right.
Or even, you know, Malaysia.
Or Morocco.
Morocco,
or
yeah. It's the theocratic regimes, and there's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are brainwashed from birth to think of this particular doctrine, which in Saudi Arabia was Wahhabi Islam.
Right.
And then you have your sect of Shia Islam in Iran, mm-hmm. which are competing theologies in the Middle East.
Right.
That's what creates terrorism. Not Islam per se. It's like if someone taught the Old Testament, where mm-hmm. it talks about, stoning mediums and sorcerers, mm-hmm. right? Well, nobody teaches that. So imagine if there was this church that taught Old Testament. You would get some really barbaric behavior coming out of that, right? If it was taught in a theocratic way, you stone sorcerers and mediums to death. You know, you teach the worst parts of ancient text. As mm-hmm. modern religious theology, and people go out and act it out. That's pretty much what has happened with in these theocracies in Saudi Arabia and Iran. That's why people blow themselves up.
Right, and I would put another layer on there, because this is something that I saw when I was in the Air Force, is the influence of not just Saudi Arabia and Iran, but the influence of other nations, for instance, the old Soviet Union. So you have to forgive me if I say the USSR and the Soviet Union instead of Russia, because it was more than just Russia. Right. But the old KGB and the things that they did, they sponsored a lot of this. They provided the means, they provided the materials, and they did this because if you've got some people who are predisposed to do some of these things, and some states that are predisposed to do some of these things, all they need is some resources and a little encouragement. Mm-hmm. And they will do that because the Soviet Union saw that as a way to destabilize the West. Let me give you an example. Have you ever seen the movie Red Dawn?
I have not.
Not the remake, but the original one with Patrick Swayze's son. Was it Patrick? It's an incredible movie, and to this day I shake my head and wonder how they ever got it made, because this is what happened when that movie played in Europe, and this is back in the 1980s. When that movie played in Europe, wherever it played in the movie theaters, they would get bombings, I mean, literal bombings, firebombed, or at least threats of it. But oftentimes they had firebombings. They would have people attack these theaters that were going to play this movie. Why? Well, the reason why was the format for invading the United States in this movie was actually very similar to some plans that the Soviets had. And we only have a couple of minutes. I didn't go into the whole plot of the movie. But what I'm getting at is, they wanted to stir up unrest, and they didn't want people to know what they were doing, so they would use third parties. And if they could use a Muslim terrorist group, if they could use a Basque separatist group, if they could use an Irish Catholic group like the Irish Republican Army, it didn't matter to them. The Red Army faction, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. As long as it harassed their enemies, the West, and cause problems and everything. And a lot of people stateside just didn't see what was going on. I admit, I was in a unique position. I'm seeing this all the time. And that's, again, when it came to 9/11, you look at these things that took place. And then, of course, with the dissolution of the Soviet Union, you had a lot of these groups that had training and they had resources, but they no longer had a controlling agent on it. Because, to be fair, the Soviet Union did kind of regulate some of these things. But once they were gone, it's like free agents going out and looking for something to do. And I guess one of my biggest surprises is it took so long before something like that came to such a dramatic fashion here in the United States that it could not be swept under the rug. Because the 93 bombing really was kind of swept under the rug.
Yeah, it was.
People don't, they just detonated a little bomb, you know. Well, their goal was to topple one tower into the other tower.
Yeah, and they just screwed it up.
Exactly. If they'd have parked in a different area, they might have had different results. But they were parked in one of the worst areas. And see, this is where I see the hand of God coming in sometimes. Because people say, well, why did God allow that to happen? Well, we live in a world with spiritual wickedness. But that truck bomb in the 93 bombing, they parked in one of the worst possible areas if you want to destroy the building. And same thing on 9/11. There were people whose alarms didn't go off that morning. Oh. They missed their trains. They missed their bus. There should have been thousands more people in those buildings than what was there. And yet, you know, God had some mercy in the midst of that. Wait, stay tuned. We've got another half hour. We're going to continue talking about 9/11. So stay tuned. Mm. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Late Night Live with Pastor Al. I'm your host, Pastor Al Davis. We'll be with you until midnight tonight, and kind of a somber program here this evening. We are talking about September 11, tomorrow being the anniversary, of course, Patriot Day. And, you know, it was named that before September 11 attacks occurred. And it is fitting that it has that name, I think, because there were a lot of people who showed true patriotism on that day. A lot of people were heroes on that day. And I am talking in the studio with my friend Khalid Namar, and we are sharing some thoughts and remembrances of 9/11 and some other thoughts of things that kind of led up to it and things related to that. And we'll be sharing some more thoughts. But normally, our producer doesn't get on the air with us, but Seth is going to sound off here a little bit today. We're going to get him on, and Seth, I'm going to get your last name wrong.
It's Williams.
Williams, that's what I thought it was, and I wanted to make sure I had the right last name there. I mean, Seth has been our new producer for not too long, just a month or so. So he's been doing a great job, but he's been in radio for a number of years, and he was working in radio here in Northeastern Ohio on 9/11. And we were talking in the break earlier about this, and so I asked him to come on and share some thoughts. But I also want to remind you before he does, check us out online at livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com, and I'm hoping tomorrow to get the program uploaded, and you can go there and you can listen to past programs, and it'll be hour two for today. I have 2 hours on Sunday nights, 10 o'clock to midnight. And some people, of course, like our friends in Florida, are only with us in the 11 o'clock hour, which is one of the reasons we're doing it now instead of during the 10 o'clock hour. But I have them on our website, livewithpastoral.com, and you can listen to the 10 o'clock hour, and then we also have the 11 o'clock hour listed separately so you can listen to them easier. And we also have our Friday afternoon half-hour program on there as well. All that's at livewithpastoral.com. But Seth, you've been in radio for a few years, and where were you on September 11, 2001?
A few, 25 years.
25, that's a few years.
That's a few years. I was actually on WMMS back then, the rock station here in town, and we were live doing mornings, and we saw the footage of the first plane that it hit, but everybody thought it was just a commuter plane at the time. Nobody knew what it was.
And you said you were on air.
We were on air.
It's happening. So you're trying to do your live on-air programming while seeing this happen.
Yeah, we watched it. You know, there was a TV on in the studio, and we saw the smoke and everything coming out of the first tower from the first plane. And then all of a sudden, we actually saw live as it happened.
Yes.
The second plane hit the building. And right then, the guy I did the show with said, we're at war.
Yes.
And we all kind of knew that something major was going on then. And his brother actually was a police officer stationed at the base of the World Trade Center.
Mm.
So he was really kind of freaking out, a little bit worried, and constantly trying to call. We couldn't get a hold of him, obviously. And then when the third plane was coming over the Cleveland area, 93, I think it was.
Flight 93, yes.
Is all of a sudden they evacuated Tower City, and MMS was in Tower City at the time. And our studio here in Independence was still being built over a block over from where we are now. And we were evacuated from Tower City and had to leave and come over here. And we went to, like, national programming, whatever it was, ABC News or whatever. But then for days after that, we weren't allowed back into Tower City. You couldn't park anywhere near the building. So they allowed us to actually just be dropped off. But we had to spend all day, all night. We had to sleep there and have food delivered because you couldn't leave the building. You couldn't, you know, it was crazy.
And when you're looking at that, the things that were going on, and everybody, like I said, everybody has their things they remember where they were when things took place. But to be on the air, and even though for those who are outside of the area, WMMS, like you said, was one of the larger rock stations in the Cleveland area, Northeast Ohio. And, you know, you're providing a service, really, when you're on the radio, because the public airways are entrusted, you know, to stations. You have to get a permit, and you have to be available to, you know, deliver public news and, you know, emergency broadcasts and things and all. And you're, so you're responsible. But at the same time, you know, the goal of the station, you know, you're trying to entertain people and sell ad revenue and all that. So you're doing your job. You're there, right, not expecting war to happen while you're on air, are you?
And the entertainment stuff went out the window, but what was, yes, tough was we were trying to do play-by-play of what was going on, getting all the information and, you know, from the news and everything else that we could. But the emotions also take over.
Yes.
Because you know what's going on. You know we're being attacked. And like I said, he had a brother who was stationed right there at the base of the building.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, the anger and the emotions take over, and it was a very tense situation. It really was, and I'll never forget that day when we left, yeah, there and got evacuated, had to come over here. I mean, you looked up in the sky, there was not a plane in up there, and it was a beautiful day, but I remember, yeah, it like it was yesterday.
It's just a perfectly blue sky, I don't think there was even hardly a wispy cloud or two in the sky, and you're thinking about that, you're trying to be professional. And you're trying to, you know, at the same time process what you're seeing and going through, and at the same time realizing you've got people listening to you.
And the thing is, every year since then, I've always done tribute shows and produced, yeah, tribute shows to 9/11. And hearing some of the calls and some of the things like we played earlier on today,
yes,
tonight, and I've heard some of the most horrific things of people begging for their lives.
Yes.
And it brings a tear to my eye still to this day. And it makes me mad when I think about people forgetting about it. It makes me upset when I see kids at school. My daughter's a junior in high school, and they don't teach the stuff that they should be teaching these kids about what actually took place that day. And it's generations are going to forget, and it's sad.
Mm-hmm. And I know we cannot remember every bad thing that's happened in our history because, you know, the longer we live, the longer a nation exists, the more things there are. But there are some things that are seminal moments that really shape our culture, shape our nation, and shape us as a people. Christian or not, it affects us. I know as a pastor, it affected me. I was pastoring at the time where I'm at right now. I was a pastor, and I had been there for a few, let's see, I started pastoring there in 97, I believe it was, when I came home from the Samoan Islands where I had served as a missionary. And so I'd only been there a few years, and you know, it's just trying to find out what I can do, you know, as a pastor to help my community and offer services and things like that, what we can do to help people that are trying to process this. And I wasn't in radio at the time. I've been doing this program for 17 years, but that's after 9/11 took place, you know, a few years after that. But just to think of being live on the air, trying to process your own emotions and what's happening there, and realizing too that there's people listening to you, that
it's a responsibility.
Yes,
you had a responsibility other than to crack jokes and play some music. It was, yeah, it was time to get serious about life.
And you know, the idea that it was one of the big rock stations in Cleveland at the time, you know, it to see that even it didn't matter whether it's a rock station, country station, Christian station, everybody went. And this is what one of our callers in the last hour said toward the end of the last hour about people who were heroes on that day. And I think Khalid and Seth, both of you can think of cases where you saw people who really, you know, reached within and brought something out that helped people. And I would say even in a case like with you being on the air, the ability to process what's happening and still realize there's people listening to you and to make a difference and hold it together to do that is, that's heroic in that respect as well. And then, of course, Khalid, you know, being in security work at the time, you understand these things, and to have to be able to get back to work. Did you go to work the next day?
I did. I did. And it was kind of upsetting to talk to some people who, based on their very limited knowledge of world affairs or history, they kind of just dumb things down
mm-hmm.
because that's just what they do. And it was upsetting because it kind of made me just. And so here's what's interesting. I was in Europe in July of 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Belgium and I was in Ireland for a little bit. I came back through New York. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a young lady who was from New York on the airplane. She had gotten off in New York. And we had exchanged numbers, and I tried to call her after this happened, and I couldn't reach anybody. Of course, the phones were all down.
Right.
It shook me because I was just on a transatlantic flight
mm-hmm.
of just 6 weeks earlier, and then I see this. It really shook me. And then maybe about a year or two later, the airport in Brussels was bombed.
Mm-hmm.
I was in that airport.
Mm.
So this was just hitting me close to home, you know, just a couple of months after coming back. So it was a bitter taste in my mouth for a long time. Just and I didn't really want to watch any of the footage or any of the bodies or hear the stories
mm-hmm.
that I heard. It took me years to actually start watching the retrospectives because I heard some things that were just horrific.
Yes.
But people have to make a choice between either being burned up or jumping to their deaths. Imagine the hell of having to do that. And then mm-hmm. Meeting a lady whose brother died at the Pentagon. And mm-hmm. and she goes to the Pentagon every year to kind of commemorate and everything. So this is real to people. And it's something that has been, I think, dumbed down by a lot of our public with these silly conspiracies and
yes.
Ridiculous, you know, it was an inside job, which is the silliest thing in the world. But that's what people do. Yeah.
Well, and that's where I think that some of these memorials, in particular, like the one in Shanksville, I've been there twice. And the last time I was there, we were there with our son and daughter. And, you know, they were born after 9/11. And so they have no real experience firsthand.
Yeah.
But one of the things at the Shanksville Memorial is you go in and you have these little phone things you pick up and you listen to it. And it's those 911 calls or some of those like we had, you know, in the clip that we played in the beginning where you have somebody calling. They know they're going to die and they call home to leave some final message to their loved ones. And you have those things, you know, and these are the people from, you know, Flight 93, and obviously there's more out there from the other flights and things and the people in the buildings and all that were going through this just absolutely horrendous thing. And, you know, so you're hearing this, and when we were there, we spent some time, and just to watch them, you know, start to listen to these things and see some of the video that they have playing there, and to begin to see it dawn on them at least a little bit that there's something that really happened that's bad to this country. And to me, and speaking as a pastor, again, this shows like I read the verse there in Ephesians about there's evil in the world. There's spiritual wickedness in the world. And to see it manifested so blatantly, so obviously, it's manifested a billion ways every day in little things, the little things that people do to each other. And we kind of get used to that and we ignore it or we don't know about it because it happens somewhere else. But when something so massive, so big, just grabs your attention like 9/11 did. And for other generations, you know, like Pearl Harbor and mm-hmm. Or the Kennedy assassination, and going further back, President Lincoln assassinated. When people heard about that, there were people who just, you know, they just broke down. And so you see these, and it's a manifestation of the fact that there is evil, real evil works or lives and works in the world, and it has to be opposed. I had a privilege of being at the Ohio Veterans Memorial yesterday morning. And for those who are in northeastern Ohio, it's in the village of Clinton in the southern part of Summit County. And I've been there a number of times, and I certainly recommend it to people who are in the area. And they had a group. Are you familiar with the term Pooley? And the Marines have what they call Pooleys?
No.
Pooleys, they said it's a really original term. When somebody comes in and they're going to join the Marines and like they're in school and they get a deferred entry program or something, so they're in a pool of recruits that, you know, they're still in high school or whatever, they're delayed entry. So they're the pool of recruits. They're not ready to go to basic training yet, but they're already basically signed up and ready to go. And in many cases, they've been to the Military Entry Processing Center, the MEP Center, and they've even taken their oath sometimes. And so they're all set, but they haven't gone, they're not ready for basic yet. So they call them poolies because they're in a pool. See how it goes?
Yep, poolies.
And one of the things that they do is they have training. And they do some PT training with them, you know, during the week. And it's just to help them get prepared for when they go off to boot camp and get ready, so they'll have a leg up when they arrive and they know what they're getting into, and they've got some preparation on some drill and some physical training and conditioning and all that. Well, on Saturday, a group of them were out at the Ohio Veterans Memorial, and the Ohio Veterans Memorial had a 5K race or something like that that was going on, a run. You know, just some people were walking it, some people were running it, and so that was going on, and they had gotten permission to come there, and they brought these young men. And I was looking at the group. There was about a dozen or so. One young lady, and the rest were guys. And they're all out, and they're in front of this wall, which is the longest freestanding memorial in the country. And it has the names of every person that died in Vietnam from Ohio. On you know, the one side of the wall. The other side of the wall's got the names of people who died in the conflicts since Vietnam, in the War on Terror, in the Gulf War, in Afghanistan, things like that. And they have these young men that are getting ready to go in the Marine Corps stand there. And I overheard there's a gunnery sergeant that was kind of leading, and he said that, I think, if I remember correctly, he said he was in ninth grade when 9/11 took place. And he said that made him want to serve our country, made him want to do something. And again, we talked about heroes coming out of this. That's a hero. This is somebody that saw something and said, there's evil in the world. What can I do to combat it? And some people will go into the military to do this. Some people will go into law enforcement to do this. Some people will go into education to help educate people and let them. Other people in the ministry, and like I said, that's as a pastor, I'm trying to find ways that I could use this event to point people to Christ, and a reminder that life is short. You don't know. Those people who died on 9/11 did not wake up in the morning saying, this is my last day on earth. Many of them didn't even know it until it happened.
Especially not sitting at their desk.
Yeah, and so, you know, people don't think about that. Life is short. What are we going to do with eternity?
And it's unpredictable.
It's unpredictable.
It's unpredictable. It's short and unpredictable.
Yeah, we just don't know, and that's why we need to be ready. Of course, as a pastor, I point people to Christ. We need to be sure of our salvation because we don't know that something like this would ever happen again. We hope that it doesn't. So that's one of the ways that I try to make a difference. But at the same time, we do have to keep these things alive and use it as hopefully a way, like I said, this gunny sergeant was using his experience as a ninth grader, seeing what happened, to encourage these young men and the one young lady that was there, to encourage them, you are about to embark upon
something that is going to set you apart from the average person. And they had a break where they had them go around and spend some time on their break. So go around, look at the memorial, look at the names on the walls, and look at the display, the exhibits for the POW MIA thing that's there, and for the Purple Hearts and the Medal of Valor and all these different things that are there. And, you know, use these things to raise up people. You know, a lot of times people say there's wolves and there's sheep in the world. I say, no, well, there's actually one other group. There's sheepdogs. And I'd like to see people aspire to be a sheepdog. Because a sheepdog does what? They protect against the wolves. There's got to be sheepdog out there. And that's one good thing came in 9/11. Like that gunny sergeant that said, some told me I need to make a difference. And he's using that experience to try and encourage other young men and women, you need to make a difference with your life. And he encourages me as a pastor to tell people, you got to make a difference with your life. You have to do something. And, you know, Seth was in radio, entertainment, but they were able to make a difference. You were in security work. You were able to make a difference, and you still are today. I know we only have a couple of minutes, but a final thought or something?
Yeah, one thing about these conspiracy theorists, I had talked to a couple of them few months ago, and I asked them a question. I said, well, so what do you think happened to all those people?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have an answer.
Yeah. They're held somewhere, nobody ever gets away. Yeah. Nobody ever says anything.
Yeah. I just walked away from the conversation. I said, you have to explain all those people on those planes. You have to explain where people's relatives are. This is just lunacy. What I had done, I eventually went into other fields. I mean, I worked in corrections. I got a chance to try to reach a lot of inmates. I worked as a tutor, a reading tutor. I've been in front of kids in schools teaching just respect for the law, mm-hmm. respect for their fellow students and teachers, and respect in their communities, just little things like that, trying to get people to think differently about life and not look at themselves as victims. Because people who look at themselves as victims do bad things. The Holocaust was caused by people who thought themselves to be victims of Jews.
Mm-hmm.
The people who perpetrated 9/11 looked at themselves as victims of the evil West.
Right.
Victimization is a horrible, horrible state of mind because it causes people to do bad things. Mass shooters, victims.
Yes.
The biggest victims who take a gun and decide to destroy because I feel wounded.
Mm-hmm.
Victimization is one of the biggest diseases in the world that's undiagnosed.
Well, and again, we've not spent a whole lot of time on the gospel message here because we're just sharing about some thoughts on 9/11 and all. But this is one of the things that, of course, Christ came for, to show us that we can overcome these things. There is evil in the world, but in the end, you read the end of the Bible, good triumphs over evil. And, you know, I'm encouraged. I read the end of the book. God wins. And so I'm encouraged by that. But at the same time, I like that we think about that. People are convinced that they're victims and they need to strike back. The devil loves to convince people that way.
Yeah.
And yet God comes in and he says, listen, I can help where nobody else can. And he gives us ultimately something to live for. And because of what he did for us, you know, we think of what Christ did, he accomplished on the cross, he shed his blood to pay for our sins. And when we know that we're going to be with him, it encourages us in the face of all of the evil that's in the world to know he'll never leave us or never forsake us. He's with us. And no matter what happens, if absent from the body, Paul said, means to be present with the Lord. And I just want to encourage people, if you're listening tonight, you know, check up on your relationship with God. I'm not asking you to join my church, but I do want you to know Christ as your Savior and know your sins are forgiven. Because if anything like this ever happens again, you know you'll be with the Lord in heaven. And resolve in the face of evil to take a stand, to do something, to make a difference in the world around us. So many people, Christians included, we just sit around doing our own thing and we don't make a difference. We need to be out there. Salt, the Bible says we're supposed to be salt. Doesn't do any good when it's in the shaker, does it? It's got to get out of the shaker before it makes a difference. And God's people need to get out and make a difference. I want to thank you for listening tonight. Do something tomorrow to remember 9/11. Thanks for listening. God bless and have a great week.